You're listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. I'd give my right arm to be ambidextrous. The pros and cons of training both sides. I've always found this to be a fascinating topic. Is it better to train both sides or just focus on one? What exactly does it mean to train both sides? There are a number of layers to this second question. The first layer is the concept of improving your ability with the techniques that your weaker side is already doing, like making the power of your left hook comparable to that of your straight right hand. Of course, unless you've suffered some sort of stroke, you are always using your weak side limbs for something. Whether you stand on your weak leg as a base while kicking with your good leg, or strike with the good hand while guarding with the other. Having said that, it is common among fighters to have a favorite limb for striking. Advice like, "watch out for his right hand," is common in the fight game. If you rely on your favorite weapon, and it's a common one, like a right hand, you'll have a much harder time penetrating the defenses of your opponents, especially as the quality of your opponents improves. There's an expression in boxing for the unusual fighter who has knockout power with either hand that goes, "he has dynamite in both fists." A fine example of this type of ambidexterity was a French-Canadian kickboxer from the 80s and 90s named Jean-Yves Thériault, who recorded knockouts with each of his four limbs. This is a very desirable attribute to develop. It makes defense much more difficult for your opponent and can certainly be developed, even if you have a low opinion of the potential of your weak side. It simply takes the persistence that is referred to in the literal meaning of the phrase Kung Fu, skill that comes from hard work over an extended period of time. It obviously helps your game to make sure each limb does what it is already doing to its full potential. I see little room for argument there. Moving to a different area, most stand-up fighters, whether strikers, grapplers, or weapon specialists, have a side of their body that they prefer to keep in front, oriented towards the opponent. They are divided into left side in front, commonly referred to as orthodox, and right side in front, which is called southpaw. The word southpaw originally comes from baseball. On a regulation diamond, as the pitcher stands square-shouldered to home plate, his left hand is towards the south. Thus, a left-handed pitcher hurls with his southern paw. The traditional doctrine in striking is to lead with your weak side, so a left-handed fighter usually takes up a southpaw stance with his weaker right hand in front. This results in three possible juxtapositions of lead between two fighters. Orthodox versus orthodox, which is very common. Orthodox versus southpaw, less common. And finally, southpaw versus southpaw, very uncommon. When orthodox fights orthodox, it is the same situation as when southpaw fights southpaw. This situation is referred to by different names. I call it matched stances. And of course, when an orthodox fighter squares off with a southpaw, I call it unmatched stances. It's common knowledge in combat sports that there are certain tactics that work well when fighting in matched stances, and of course, other tactics that work well when fighting unmatched. It is wise to educate yourself about these differences. So the next layer of the discussion is that, at a minimum, you should learn these specific tactics so that a fighter who is accustomed to fighting in unmatched stances has less of an advantage over you. Or, if you are a southpaw and are thus accustomed to fighting in unmatched stances yourself, you should do the opposite and acquaint yourself with the standard tactics for matched stances. Despite what you may think, neither set of tactics is more difficult than the other. It just depends on what you're used to. Now we come to the next layer of our discussion, which is, developing the ability to fight from either lead. The first level of learning the opposite lead is to develop survival skills to be used when you find yourself inadvertently in that lead, to be used in the brief time before you safely switch back to your accustomed one. This happens more with kickboxing than with boxing, especially after throwing some kicks. The second level of learning the opposite lead is to develop the ability to make occasional forays into it as part of a combination of tactics, before switching efficiently and safely back to your preferred lead. This concept is taught and used in a number of arts. The Filipino empty hand striking arts, like Sundokan, Panuntukan, and Panandyakman, are notorious for using it. The early heavyweight boxing champion, Bob Fitzsimmons from Australia, was famous for doing it as well. It was known as the Fitzsimmons shift. The third level of fighting from the opposite lead is switching for extended periods in order to give your opponent the juxtaposition of stances that he or she least likes. This requires a high enough level of skill in the opposite lead that you are comfortable with the footwork and defense there. No small feat. A further wrinkle is that some people prefer to lead with their strong side, ignoring the traditional paradigm. This was popularized by Bruce Lee, who relied heavily on the leading straight punch, which should not be confused with the jab from boxing. As made evident by these and other data points and arguments, this is a complex and nuanced subject. Our lazy human brains hate complexity and nuance, but that is often where the key to excellence lies. Let's look at some examples from non-martial sports. Why is it that pitchers in baseball, with very few exceptions, only learn to pitch with one hand, when a significant number of batters learn to hit from both sides, hence the term switch hitter? In American football, a right-handed quarterback finds it much easier to throw a pass while running to his right than when running to his left. This is a significant limit to the options of a mobile quarterback. Why haven't quarterbacks solved this problem by cultivating the ability to pass with their offhand? With the salaries earned by NFL quarterbacks and major league pitchers, if this were a practical option, you can bet someone would have done it by now to improve his value come draft or trade time. Clearly, some skill sets translate more easily from side to side than do others. In one sense, this discussion parallels a topic I covered in an earlier episode in which I discussed the relative merits of martial sports versus martial combat arts. In sport application, especially at higher levels, the skill and athleticism is so advanced that it usually behooves the athlete to bring only his or her A game, meaning his or her best side. This is especially true when you factor in the rules, which strictly limit the conditions in a predictable way. In a combat or self-defense setting, the conditions have no limits. Anything can happen, so adaptability is at a premium. Conditions like this make training both sides more important. For example, if you injure your good hand, there will be no timeouts or substitutions. In Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, the traditional wisdom has been to develop every technique on both sides. Having said that, Marcelo Garcia, who is considered by many in the know to be the best active practitioner of BJJ, has taught and himself practices that some areas of jiu-jitsu, like sweeping from the guard and passing the guard, have so many variables yielding such a level of complexity that he focuses on building those parts of his game on only one side. Another element to consider comes into play if you plan on participating in martial sports in a serious way and are in a hurry to do so. If you stick to one lead, you will develop a functional game much more quickly than if you're spending training time on both sides. And finally, outside of the realm of performance level is the highest form of self-defense, defending against injury and mitigating the effects of aging. If you stay out of trouble, you may go through your entire life without once employing your skills against a human attacker, which would be a laudable achievement. But, short of dying young, we are all subject to the ravages of time. If things go the way most of us would like, you will live a long time and be training for most of it. Your body can probably handle the hard use of years of training better if you divide the repetitions that you practice between both sides of your body over the long haul. There you have it. To me, in this discussion, both sides, no pun intended, have valid and interesting points to make. As is so often the case when subjects of debate arise involving the martial arts, your own particular result when doing a cost-benefit analysis of the value of training both sides will be strongly influenced by what you want from your training, and of equal importance, how far along you are in your martial arts career. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.